Hello and welcome to Coast AM. I am Lisa Gar. It's a true privilege to be here this evening. Thank you so much for joining me. My first hour guest is an amazing story. I mean, think about this. You're raised an atheist. You have no real concept around spirituality or any belief system, but you ask, is there more to life? And then one night you start seeing lights around people. And then you can actually quantum jump inside their bodies and see life from their eyes. That would freak me out. That is exactly what happened to my guest, Paul Selig. He graduated from Yale with a master's degree. He served on the faculty of NYU, and then he started to channel the living, not those that have passed over, those that are still with us, you, me. So we will get into Paul's story. He has five books that he has channeled. They're all channeled texts, and they're all through Tartar, and they have really phenomenal information in them. So we will be back with Paul Selig when we come back. This is Lisa Gar. You are listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I am Lisa Gar, and it's a great, exciting night here. We're going to be speaking with all sorts of beings, living and living. Paul Selig is joining me, and he is the author of many, many books called I Am the Word, The Book of Love. These are all channel texts. The most recent one is called The Book of Truth. Welcome to the show, Paul. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So when you started off and you were basically going through Yale master's degree, served on the faculty of NYU, have quite an impressive resume. What was your goal at that point? What were you going after?
Well, I was a playwright and I was studying at Yale and I was doing quite well at a very, very early age. And I had a list of things I, thought I needed to accomplish in my life to be okay. And I got the whole list and I wasn't okay. That's really what happened.
Wow, you were in the
And
MFA program at Goddard
yeah,
College? I mean, a lot.
I ran a graduate program too for a long time. Yeah. So, but when I was 25 and I was out of school, I hit this wall and I began to open up spiritually, really, out of sheer necessity, not because I was looking to become spiritual. I didn't even know that a spiritual life was something somebody could have or could want. And the teaching followed later, and it's what I really did for a quarter of a century. And my psychic work and my channeled work was happening pretty quietly until the book started coming through me, which was about 7, 8 years ago.
So you had always experienced the channeling and so forth. Well, you had a specific event that
Yeah.
happened.
Yeah, I was 25, and I had just really come to believe that there might be something more than I had thought that there was, and because I grew up without any of that stuff. And I heard there was this thing happening called the harmonic convergence, and people were going to be waking up. And at that moment in my life, I think I assumed kind of innocently that if there was something out there, a God or a spirit of the universe, whatever, and you asked to be woken up, why wouldn't that happen? And I went up to the roof of this building, that I was living in at that time. And I asked, and I ended up having an experience of energy. And I mean, for all I know, I was hyperventilating. I may never know what really happened. But it was an experience of energy moving up through my body and out through the top of my head. And, people later said it sounded like, a spontaneous kundalini awakening or a soul awakening or a Shaktipat. I mean, there's all these names, and I don't know that they matter. But for me, it was a very tangible experience of something more. And I think given how I was raised, I needed something provable to myself, something that was, experiential.
What did your parents
And
do?
my father died when I was very young. He was a businessman, and my mom, had been a painter, when she was younger. There was basically, a somewhat normal family, but there was really, I was grew up in the Upper West Side of Manhattan. We didn't think about these things. We had better things to do. I mean, I think this stuff was for somebody else in some other state. And it was a convenient way to live, but I was missing out on a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't even know was there. But I started seeing lights around people, you know, after that little rooftop thing. And that really began to change everything once again.
Lights meaning auras or orbs or
No,
I
little
don't.
things, little flashes like fireflies started going off around people. And, you know, mostly white, sometimes blue, sometimes violet. And, you know, my friends were saying, you know, maybe you have a detached retina, you know, maybe you have a brain tumor. I mean, I wasn't a likely candidate for this. You know, I'd been a real sort of hard partying kid. I had platinum blonde Billy Idol hair, you know, and a lot of black leather. And all of a sudden, I was on this real spiritual journey that made no sense to me, and perhaps not to my friends either. But yeah, initially they were lights, so I'd felt energy and I was seeing lights, and I'd actually heard a voice, you know, telling me to get my act together after I sort of hit that wall, which was the first voice I ever heard. And that really propelled me forward into the work that I do now. But the work that I do now began as something extremely personal and nothing that I was looking for any attention for whatsoever. I mean, that's something that happened over time.
Did you ever recognize what the lights were around people or what they are?
Well, you know, it's really funny. I don't always know what they are. I mean, you know, when the violet ones flash and they're kind of, you know, amazing to see, I think that that's a high-level guide. When the white ones show up in my apartment, I think it's an aspect of somebody who's present, either, you know, living or crossed. You know, when the blue ones go off over people's heads, those seem to be an aspect of the person, a higher consciousness, something that's in the field. That's what it seems to look like to me. But primarily, even though I see, and when I'm reading for people, I can access, you know, visual information, I'm primarily a clairaudient, which means I hear, and a clairsentient, which means that I feel energy, and I can sort of, you know, step into other people and kind of become them.
How does that work? You see life from their perspective or their eyes or their energy?
Well, it's an odd thing. I do two things. You know, I'm a conscious channel, so I work with these guides that dictate these books through me. So I haven't written any of these books. I mean, the books were all I was sitting there with my eyes closed and speaking into a recorder or in front of a room full of people, and all of those books are the unedited transcripts of those sessions. That's the channeled work. When I work with the living, and they call me a medium for the living, I'm actually have this odd ability to sort of step into people. And I use the name. I usually use the full birth name if I can have it. I don't always need it, kind of as a coordinate. So if you think of me as a radio, and that's how I describe myself, when I'm channeling, I'm tuned into the station that my guides are at, and they're the broadcast that you're all getting. If I'm reading for a client and say, I'm working with you and you're having issues with your sister who you haven't spoken to in 5 years, and you give me her name, I can step into her and I may start to resemble her, and I'll start to hear her usually and hear what's going on and the dynamic between the two of you. I'll go back and forth. If you ever saw, you know, Ghost and, you know, you saw Whoopi Goldberg sort of be stepped into, that seems to be what I do. And I find it kind of amazing because these are people that I've never seen, and I've been filmed, you know, stepping into people, you know, at a distance, and they're sort of, you know, intercutting me with the real person, and you can see that, you know, I'm really somatizing or taking on the physical characteristics or expressions of those people. So how does it work? I don't know. Yeah.
You've been on Nightline and on George's Beyond Belief and
Yeah.
a lot of different shows where they're really trying to show what it is that you do. But in your experience, when you lose yourself into somebody else, where does Paul go?
I recede. I mean, when I'm channeling, I'm like climbing into the back seat of a car and letting my guides drive. And occasionally I'm leaning over the front seat saying, "Where the hell are you going? This doesn't make sense." And then they kind of have to explain it. So I've been known to interrupt the transmissions that come through me. That's that form of channeling. When I'm reading somebody, I don't really call that channeling. I call it stepping in. I'm present still, but I'm allowing myself to assume somebody else. And it's an interesting thing. You know, I've been a playwright when I was young, and the idea of a character speaking through me was something that I could sort of do. I understood that. And it wasn't until somebody once came to me for a session and wanted to talk to my guides, and she mentioned her father. And then my eyes were closed, and then she gasped. And I had tuned into her father, and she said, "Oh my God, you look just like him." And then that began
Yes.
to happen again and again and again and again, and it became provable. And so I realized that I was actually sort of stepping into, I believe that I'm stepping into the energy field of somebody else, and I can do it at different aspects. I can do it at the level of personality, where, say, you're not talking to your sister, and your sister thinks you said something at a wedding, and I'll get that stuff. But, and that's the petty personality stuff, but I can also often access the higher. And the higher is usually where you talk about what you're learning through this or what needs to happen in order to heal or rectify or resolve a situation.
Do you have specific guides that you work with as well that talk to you as well?
The guides do the books and they tend to pipe in with sessions. Although when I'm working psychically, it's a different skill set. So when I'm stepping into people, the difference is that I'm interpreting information. So I can be seeing stuff, feeling stuff. The first thing that I normally do is step into somebody and I take an emotional posture, either anger, fear, screw you, whatever it is. And then I have to interpret that. And as I get comfortable there, I begin to hear and discern. The guides that I work with might come in and say, ask them what happened when they were 17, or this is really about something entirely different, and this is all about their mother, and perhaps come through with information to support them. But my guides, when I work psychically, the guides that I work with don't care whether or not, we get the job we think we should get or buy the right house versus the house we're not so sure about. But yeah, I do have guides, but the guides are teachers and they come through and they dictate these books, one after the other after the other. I mean, none of these books, I don't think any of them took more than 30 days of sittings. And that's half an hour to an hour, usually a day. And they come out fully formed, no editing. And that's been the deal with Tarcher is, I said, these are channeled books. If I go back and edit them, they're no longer channeled books. They've been fixed. And I'm grateful to have a publisher that agreed. So what comes out is what.
What you can, are you there, Paul? Paul, we lost him for a second there. So what, yeah, what comes out? It's interesting because it seems like the vibration of the guides is something that comes in different than the vibration of the person that he's speaking with. Here's some of the information that comes through this channel text is also very truthful. It's all very, very truthful. When you read it, it kind of makes sense to you. Someone asks in the book, can you explain to me what truth is in my everyday life? Paul, are you back with us?
I'm here. Can you
Yeah,
hear me?
I can. So what is, tell me about the five books. There's five different channelings here. I am the word was the first one, right?
I'm the Word was the first book. I mean, I wasn't expecting to do any of these things. I was actually working on a writing project in New York. I had terrible, terrible writer's block. I ended up getting fired from the gig, and I went to bed for 3 days, and I figured that was it for me. And a friend of mine called me up and said, "Paul, this might be a good time to, write the memoir about how you became clairaudient." And I had no intention of doing that. And my guides piped in and said, "We have a book to write, and if you take 2 weeks, we'll do it." And that was the first book, I Am the Word. And that's really the foundation for all of their teachings. But what they're really taking us through, seemingly, if I can understand this, is a system and a process of realizing our own true self or the divine self, whatever you want to call it, in form. And that means the divine as manifest as you. It's a trip. It's getting trippier as the teachings go on. But as you said, there's a real truth to them, and it's really hard for me to argue the information that comes through. And the guides say that the books are operating on two levels. They're the words on the page, which provide an intellectual context, but that the real books are the energy that informs the text. And if people, if you go online and you look at the reviews, people are saying, "I'm reading the book and my body is vibrating. I'm reading the book and I'm seeing auras." There's a lot of phenomena that comes. And when I do workshops with the guides, the same phenomena happens. So people are feeling the energy in a way that's experiential and they can know. So kind of like what happened to me up on that roof all those years ago is something now that's happening to the people who are in an encounter with these texts. The texts almost seem to be living things that work with the reader and support the reader in their own evolution. At least that's what the readers are saying. And the guides pretty much said that's what was going to happen. And it seems to be the case.
So, and the books address various topics like creation and truth and mastery and knowing. Did these themes come from directly from these guides, or is it what the theme is that humanity is working on at the time?
Well, the guides come through with the whole thing. So I don't even know the title of the book until they deliver it. The next one I actually know because they sort of warn me where they're going with this stuff, although the dictation hasn't started. So they're taking humanity through a process of realization. They actually say that the species itself is at a time of transformation and that we have the opportunity to realize ourselves. We also have the opportunity to blow ourselves up if we feel like it. So there's choices that we have, and as we begin to operate, they say, as the true self or the divine self, whatever you want to call it, we can claim a new world into manifestation, but that's not done through the personality self or the egoic structure or whatever you want to call it that's operating in fear. So the guides have their own agenda, and they're meeting us, I think, as we are, wherever the reader happens to be, to support this kind of evolution, personal and planetary.
So have you received any more information about the species? You said we're at a time of transformation. We could either, we're changing, or we could blow ourselves up. Do you?
Well, I mean, the guides aren't, they don't operate in fear, and they're certainly not suggesting that we're going to blow ourselves up. I don't think I would be listening to them if I was getting stuff like that. But they do say that the fact that we believe that a bomb is going to keep us safe is one of the craziest things they've ever heard. And they say, you know, if you have a bomb, it's expected to go off eventually, and the idea that it's not going to is kind of naive. I mean, that's my paraphrasing them. This is what they've said from the very beginning. They say that humanity is a time of reckoning, and they say that a reckoning is a facing of oneself and all of one's creations. This is the individual facing him or herself and the collective facing of the self. And they say that everything that's been created in fear needs to be recreated in a higher way. And that we're operating right now in all of this fear, and we've got walls and divisions and all of this separation. They say that our belief that we're separate from our source, whatever that is, has finally manifested at the level that we think we're separate from the person next to us, and that that's simply not so. So they're giving us an opportunity, I think, to claim a higher alignment. But they also say that this is happening without them. You know, the newest book, The Book of Truth, is speaking to truth as a vibration that they say is here now and is actually recreating everything. And they say, in truth, a lie will not be held. And what that means is what we think we are that's not in alignment to truth, and what a government is and what a political system is or a religious system is, all of these things that are out of alignment with truth are going to need to be recreated in a higher way. They're saying pretty much, if you think of truth as a wave that comes, it's actually reclaiming those things that are out of alignment. And they're supporting us in claiming this alignment so that we can sort of be supported through this time of transition.
So if there's something in our life that is inauthentic or out of the realm of truth, then looking at it from a we are all in alignment with truth perspective could start to shed some light on it.
Very much so. But I think, you know, they're taking a little bit farther than the idea of a convenient truth, like a convenient idea that we think of, like the idea that we have a personal truth. That's not what they're interested in. They say what is true is always true. A personal truth might be an opinion. My personal truth is that I shouldn't have to work for a living, or my personal truth is that I should do whatever I want, and that can be fine. Nobody's going to argue with that. But the guides say what is true is always true. So they would say, I think, that it's always true that you and I are having this conversation at this moment in time. It's always true that this is happening. Now, it's not always true that we're talking. But they say that the true self, or the eternal self, that aspect of you that knows who she is, as an aspect of source seeking to, you know, claim itself in fullness, is always true. What's not true is what we think we are, separate from our source, separate from the person next to us, or whatever our parents told us we were, or whatever crap we were all taught to buy into that tells us whether or not we're worthy.
Societally, and yes, growing up, etc. It makes a lot of sense once we get into it, but I want to find out a little bit more about, you know, what are the challenges of this, and can you turn it on and off, and all of those questions I'm sure you've been asked, but I want to know. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, I will continue with my guest, Paul Selig, and with you listening. We'll be right back. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. God, I love that. I saw Queen this last week with Adam Lambert in just at the Hollywood Bowl live. So amazing. Talking about somebody who can channel. I mean it. Adam Lambert channeled Freddie Mercury in the most amazing way. But he's also extremely talented, too. But he maybe had a little help from the other side. My guest tonight is Paul Selig. We're talking about his trilogy and beyond of books that are all channeled texts. But he's talking about this experience of bringing in or going into a person's energy field and speaking sometimes from the truth that they don't even know themselves, from such a vibration of truth, thus the name of the book of truth, that it carries a certain frequency. He also talks to guides and has guides and so forth and channels as a part of what he does. But it just goes to show you that it's not specifically someone who was born in an ashram or from a psychic lineage. He was an academic steeped in academia and found this experience of switching from the left to the right brain, and it has helped so many people. So we will be back. You can look him up on his website. It's paulselig.com. And we will come back with more information about Paul and what his guides have to tell us. We'll be right back. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I am Lisa Garr. My guest is Paul Selig, and we're talking about the channel texts that he has written, his guides have written. So, Paul, tell me what is one of the most challenging things about this whole process between channeling guides and stepping into people's fields. What's challenging about that?
Well, I mean, it's all challenging in some ways. It's nothing that I ever expected to be doing. So it's sort of constantly asking me to reconsider how reality works, because I didn't think that these things were possible. If I'm stepping into somebody and I'm feeling things that I shouldn't know, I'm the only guy that I know that's ever had a hot flash. I know what it's like to feel pregnant. I once went through a birth when I was reading for a midwife.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, they're astonishing things, but wow. I also know what it's like to take on the skeleture of a horse, you know, when you step into an animal.
Wow.
So I have these experience of that are very physical, and I've been able to support people who, you know, have people in their lives that have lost speech or the ability to speech, and I'm able to sort of access information for them. With the channeled work, the hardest part with the guides is truthfully, for me, still sort of saying, who am I to be doing this? And, you know, I'm not the best student of their work. I do my best, but what they're teaching is challenging. It means that, you know, I am not who I think I am, nor are any of us.
Who is, right.
Infinitely greater, exactly.
Mm-mm.
And letting go of all those attachments to what I think should be, because it's the stuff that I was raised with and, you know, I've been taught is true, and the realization that it's not can be quite challenging for me in an ongoing way. It's exciting work. But it doesn't allow me to have my comfort zone about how I think the world works and, you know, what I think I am or what any of us are. The guides say we're infinitely more. And then they give us experiences through their work that can support that so that it's not just theoretical. What the guides are teaching, they're not, it's not a theoretical teaching. It's really about incarnating and expressing in a higher way that can be felt. And you can feel the energy when you do it, and you can send it and see it and all those things. It's quite something.
Now,
But it's not comfortable.
yeah, I can imagine that because we're changing so much. Do they mention anything about the massive changes that we are going through as a humanity and where we're going with, is there an uprising in consciousness or is there a suppression of it?
Well, no, they're saying we're waking up, but in response to our waking up, there's a pushback. So what the guides have been saying from the very beginning is that the action of fear is to claim more fear. And they say, look at every choice you ever made because you were afraid and see what it got you. And more than likely, it got you more fear. So as we start to realize who we are outside of what we were taught to be, it seems as if there's a bit of a push to sort of corral us and to keep us behaving. You know, and one of the ways to keep us behaving is to keep us frightened of one another and frightened of the world. So they're talking about great change coming. And, you know, the Book of Truth was channeled probably, I guess the sessions finished about a little over a year ago, year and a half ago, before much of what we're seeing in the world and in our country, you know, began to happen. And they're really sort of preparing us, I think. The guides, you know, lectured a couple of days before the last election. There's a video of it up on YouTube, and I think the title of the lecture was Great Change. And they said, you know, your idea of change is, you know, do I want our choice? Your idea of choice is I'll have milk instead of cream in my coffee. And they said, what you're really going to get is what happens when the table gets turned over. And those aren't the choices anymore, something else. We're really having to look beyond what we've known and claim something new. And this is a process, if I understand it correctly, of almost releasing the old or seeing it sort of deconstructed so that we can claim something that might be working in a higher way. The days of sort of fixing things and putting Band-Aids on things that don't work seem to be kind of over. That's how I'm getting it.
Do they ever tell you the future or prophesize what will come?
They have at times, and I am always surprised when those things happen. You know, and I don't consider myself to be working that way. I mean, I have clients that come through and want me to predict the market, you know, and to read on a board of directors, and I do that stuff. The board of directors stuff is easy because you're stepping into people. Global events, I mean, I have to go to the global event as if it's a person and sort of step in and have that experience of it. And I mean, while I can do that, they're really talking about us being in choice. And, you know, we're the ones claiming the world that we get, you know. And they actually say, and this is sort of a trippy teaching, you know, I mean, some people say, you know, you create everything. And the guys that I work with say, you know, we're in agreement to everything that we see. It couldn't be there without our agreement. They're saying what you agree with, you're shaking hands with. What you shake hands with, you hold, which means you're in energetic accord with it. If you don't like what you're seeing, stop agreeing to it. Stop holding it. Then you can lift beyond it to claim something new.
Gosh.
So in terms of what they're predicting for the world, I think it's great change. That's
great changes for sure. It's ethically, you must not be able to do that. Answer, you know, predicting the market or is this person cheating on me or something like that. I mean, can you, that's got to have a strong ethical compromise there.
I'm pretty clear about that. I don't call myself a psychic spy. Mm-hmm. You know, I won't do it. When people call me and say, I want to know if my spouse is cheating, I'm saying, I'm sorry, that's not what I do. And predicting the market, I'm just not interested in the market, so I don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tune into, you know, I can tune into somebody who's up for a job, and I can tune into the whole hiring committee and see how you're being perceived in a way that might be helpful to you. I mean, that's something that I can do. And I don't think what I'm doing when I do this, which I'm sure I'm not, is invasive because these are sort of conversations that are happening at a higher level. You know, I'm not peeking in the window, you know, to find something that I shouldn't find. I'm actually hearing it, usually from the source, or just feeling how people are responding. It's why I can be successful when I work with people in their relationships. You know, because I can usually find out what's really going on as opposed to what seems to be going on.
Can you
but
ever
I
influence?
Seriously, yeah.
Can you influence it or chat with it?
Yeah, I can. And it's funny because sometimes I'll be reading for, say, one half of a partnership, and I'll say I'm tuning into a woman's husband for her. And I'm tuning into him, and he's pretty much saying, I'm not going to change. This is what it's going to be. And that's what I hear from him on the inner planes or telepathically. But as the session goes on, he may have shifted because he's actually party to the conversation.
Wow.
And it's interesting to see. And then I get the reports back from other people. I mean, this isn't about the work that I do isn't about getting other people to do what you want. It's not about fixing things. It may be about, releasing what you think is supposed to be there, or understanding what you do have, perhaps in a higher way that's going to bring you more joy. At least that's my hope, that it's productive work.
Yes, I mean, I wonder if your guides have told you anything about the veil between the worlds getting thinner. We see, I mean, these movies that are coming out these days, there's a lot of great movies coming out on the afterlife and transferring between worlds. There maybe always has been. I just feel like there's so many more coming out these days. Do your guides say anything about the veil between the worlds getting thinner?
They don't talk about the veil and they don't talk about dimensions. They talk about octaves, and that's their language. They talk about things existing in higher octaves. And I think they mean the same thing as dimension. So yes, they do talk about this, and they say that our availability to lift in consciousness right now is more possible because there's a lack of density. And there has been a real density that we've been having to move through. And I see it in my groups, what used to take people. I mean, I can have 100 people in the room and they can all feel the energy in a moment.
Right.
And they can raise
Interesting.
their hand, but these are people that never felt energy before. You see, so it's available for everybody now. This is all available. People have to ask for it and they have to know that it exists in order to be able to align to it. You don't order from a menu when you don't think it's not gonna when it's not gonna be on there.
Right. You
And
go to the
so
restaurant you
many,
like. True. I mean, in 18 years that I've been hosting this radio show, or not this specific one, but consciousness radio, I have noticed that it seems to be getting easier and easier to have this conversation about other dimensions and afterlife or psychic phenomenon. I mean, truly, there are more channels and guides than I've ever seen now. I personally, when I go to sleep at night, I honestly must travel very far because I wake up the next day going, "What just happened?" And it's been happening more and more and more and more. It's interesting. I don't know if your experience has been the same.
Well, when I have dreams and I wake up tired, that's usually astral, and I'm usually
Yes.
doing some other stuff elsewhere. Those technicolor dreams where you wake up tired seem to be that kind of stuff. I think we do a lot of work in our sleep. I think we're meeting with our guides. I think things are getting sorted out, in different ways. But I think what's begun to happen is that I think this stuff has always been there, but the conversation has changed. We're now able to talk about it. I'm able to, be in the world and do this. And, when I first started doing this work, and, I was terrified of becoming public about it. I didn't want to lose my jobs, and I didn't want people to decide for me, who and what I was. And what I've noticed for the most part is people don't care. And in my practice, I have clients that are judges and doctors and lawyers, and some of them are psychic too, and they're open, they're quite wonderful with it. And they're happy to know that other people like them are having this experience too. It's all over the place.
That is
It's not just for the
amazing.
special.
It is all over this place. And I mean, you can have this conversation. You can be published on with major publishing houses. You're on mainstream television and all over the place with this information. But I think it has a lot to do with you being a very grounded, mainstream person as well. You have a deep background in academics, and you have that, doesn't that's not easy to come by. You have to go through a certain amount of qualifications and certifications and hurdles to get to where you were to be directors of major university departments. So, yeah, it definitely gives you a certain amount of credibility. Have you ever been asked to channel any high public figures like presidents or people in our White House?
I've done it. I do it occasionally when friends ask. I have to be asked. I had dinner with some friends recently, and I stepped into a bunch of them, and it was really interesting to feel what they were going through. I mean, one of the ways that I actually developed the empathic ability to step into other people and train myself was watching court TV way back when that was a big thing, because I wanted to know if OJ was lying. I wanted to know what people were really feeling on the stand. And so I would find myself stepping into people and having these experiences, and getting accurate information. So it was an interesting thing to do. Do I do that in my life for the most part? No. I mean, there needs to be a reason for me to step into anybody. It's not entertainment for me. It's an interesting experience to do, but it's usually there to help. And as I say, it's not, trying to be, to access hidden information. It's really not about that. I mean, occasionally somebody will, set up a session with me, and they'll want to know if something terrible happened in their family when they were young. And, I don't, I'm probably not going to go there with them. I'm not going to confirm some terrible incident that they don't know happened. But I can step into the players and sort of see where people are coming from in a way that hopefully is going to be constructive.
That's very
And so,
responsible of you. I
yeah.
believe, I think that's a very, very wise choice. Ask me, I wanted to ask you, is it something you turn on and off? Is it always with you? Does it surprise you sometime to have this feeling? Could you be in line at the supermarket and all of a sudden jump into someone's field?
When I first started to open up as a clairsentient, and I opened up as a clairsentient because I studied a form of energy healing. And when I had my hands on people, I started to feel things for them and hear things for them that would be proven out. So that's how that started, and that was in my early 30s. But in those days, if I was riding the subway, because I live in New York, and my left arm would start to hurt, I'd look over the guy next to me, and somebody would have sat down with their arm in a cast. And so initially, I couldn't control it, and I was feeling very porous. But once I understood what it was, I stopped taking it on. So when I work with an individual, I'm making an agreement to step into their field, feel what's going on with them, or in the people in their lives to support them in hopefully some positive way. But when I'm walking down the street, no, I'm not getting hit. I'm like highly noise sensitive. I don't want to be in a crowd. I get overwhelmed really easy with the energy. So I become a little bit, insulated with this stuff as a result of it. But I'm not being assailed by it. There's stuff that I feel that I wish I wouldn't. When somebody's angry at me, occasionally I can really feel it. When they're talking, crap about me, I can feel it. But you ever hear that old thing, your ears must have been ringing? It's real. That's what it is. I can
Wow.
feel it. It doesn't feel good when it's not nice stuff. You
Interesting.
know, yeah,
Right,
you know,
right.
so, but no, it's for the most part, if I have an investment in something, I'm going to be in correlation to it. So when my guide said, when I first started feeling judged for this work from, being public in the media, the guide said, listen, as long as you care what people think about you, it's going to be an issue. And they were right. I got to let that go.
Including people that you empathically took on their energy. I think this is a couple of people called in actually and said, yes, they had the same experience and it wasn't good. It wasn't a positive experience. You've had that. Have you heard that before?
Which experience?
Jumping into somebody else's vibration and
Yeah.
feeling their feelings.
Well, it's not necessarily comfortable, but if you know what you're doing, you're there to access the information. You're not there to take it on and hold it. So if I'm tuning into somebody and they've got a lot of anger, I'm there to feel the anger, understand what it is, but it's not my job to be a sponge and absorb it, and carry it for them. That's not helping anybody. That would be, enabling somebody. So I think that, those of us who are empathic and are feeling a lot of stuff can have a rough time sometimes. I make a point when I work of working with a protection. And I don't do that because I think that there's terrible stuff out there. I think it's kind of like safe sex, I don't want to carry somebody's stuff that I don't need to carry. You
What
know
kind
what
of
I mean? It's just
protection? I mean, do you use white light or is there a tool that you can teach?
I work with the old Unity Prayer Protection, which has been around a long time, and it's a very simple prayer, which is you're affirming, it's an affirmative prayer that, the light of God, whatever you want to call God, surrounds you. And anybody can look that up. I use that, but, there's any number of them that can work. I think if they're being used in a fearful way, they're probably not all that helpful, but I think if they're being used in a common sense way, kind of like, having an umbrella in the rain, it's not a bad idea. But, if somebody is too open and too wide open that they're picking up everything and they're not able to control it, I think it'd be a very helpful thing to be able to close yourself off a bit and not
kind
be
of,
quite so porous.
Yeah, it depends on what you're asking for. I mean, if you're going into a Ouija board and you're really asking for those spirits to come out, then you're asking for those spirits to come out.
Yeah.
The experience.
That's lower level stuff potentially too. I mean, my grandma was a nice lady, but she was married like four or five times, and I don't think I want her, giving me relationship advice from the other side.
You got a good point there. All right, we will be back and talk a little bit more about the books and what's next for you. Paul Selig is my guest, and I am Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM.